This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh, the top business stories of the day. Did you hear that grill?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was fascinating because many of the responses were about specific issues, controversial issues. But I think there's also this real hunger to understand past better beyond the headline stories that we hear.
Right, and look, be it their stance on the Ketuanan Melayu, I think that was raised a couple of times in your grill, Sharad, and also down to socio-economic agendas. I believe I got a better grasp about where they stand. He mentioned the federal constitution and adhering to what our forefathers had envisioned for us Malaysians. Look, there is a tremendous amount of room for discussion, not just beyond political lines, but also beyond racial lines, beyond religious lines as well. And I hope that we can certainly foster that, well, not just here at BFM, but also other segments of society as well.
Right. Just a note, Ketuanan Melayu is not an expression used in the federal constitution.
I'm just saying it was one of the phrases that you
position,
brought up during the grill.
Absolutely. But again, real reflection of the times at this point. Also another reflection of the times, the property market and whether the bubble is about to burst or has burst, depending on who you speak to.
Yeah, according to the think tank Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, this is Ideas, they're of the mind that the property bubble is about to burst. They released a statement saying that this is following the spectacular growth that we've seen in the high-end property segment and that could lead to an economic crisis. And the arguments for this property bubble, they're saying it was ignited by rising profit expectations, growing demand, and later on supported by a credit market. And a mix of all these elements has generated a bubble.
Yeah, look, I always go back to this Box article by Brett Negara that was just released last year, okay? Anytime there's talk of a property bubble or that's about to burst, well, it's not just property investors that have to kind of sit up and take notice, but it's also the broader economy because here in Malaysia, the property sector has linkages to more than 120 industries. The property sector collectively accounts for about 10% of Malaysia's entire economy, GDP, and employs 1.4 million Malaysians. So any risks to the property sector has to be closely monitored for fear that it could bleed over into the broader economy as well.
I think the question at this point in time, there's some contention over numbers and data and what do we actually understand? Is there overhang or is no overhang? What segments is this overhang exist? And but where do we stand? Do we actually have a baseline in terms of an understanding of where the property sector is?
It depends on who you talk to, right?
So if that's the problem. If policies are based on who you talk to,
I mean, it depends on the different segments. Yeah, I mean, different. If you can see different segments of the market, they have different ideas. Like if you talk to people in the property sector, they're saying, "What bubble? What overhang? It's not that bad, right?" I think recently we had on the property show, we spoke to Sakunan Subramaniam. He's managing director of the property consultant firm Knight Frank, and we asked him what he thought about the claims of a property overhang. Here's what he has to say.
I would say there is only overhang in areas which have been wrongly built. And in most areas, I can see from the data that it is not very alarming at all. I wouldn't say location in terms of particular location like Batang Berjuntai or Kundasan or whatever not. I would say location in terms of within any area, if it doesn't have accessibility, doesn't have the facilities and amenities, then it becomes a poorly located development which will never sell. Some developers, just because they got a piece of land, they think, okay, it's viable, let's build. But then the problem lies with the fact that location may not get that type of demand.
That was Sakunan Subramaniam, Managing Director at Knight Frank. So again, we're back to the idea of where do we stand?
Frank.
Frank.
All right.
Frank.
Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. Moving on.
So where do we stand? I mean, who else has weighed in on this conversation?
Yeah, look, so it's not just industry players like the Knight Franks, the Sarkis of the domestic property sector. You got Ben and Gara as well, like you mentioned earlier, you know, watching for systemic risks. And of course, you got the buyers as well, you know, who lament the unaffordability of, you know, of the property market, right? So, you know, you got to kind of take everybody's comments with a pinch of salt because, you know, for example, that headline-grabbing figure that we saw not too long ago, 22 billion ringgit worth of unsold units here in Malaysia. Now, talk about an oversupply, but then, like you just heard from Sarki, you know, he's adding some nuance to that. Well, it depends on the location. But guess what? Whether or not the location has enough demand, it still involved leverage. You know, there's probably some risk to the financial system, you know, and hopefully it doesn't show up on the NPLs of these banks or even the potential buyers.
Yeah, the
buyers.
Non-performing loans or the impact loans of banks, yeah. Well, someone else who agrees with ideas, I think that we have an overblown high-end housing market is the Housing and Local Government Minister Zuraida Kamarudin. She's saying that, you know, they're going to have a new national housing policy that's going to be out in September, and it will attempt to address like the definition of affordable housing, the future building concept and size, as well as, you know, amenities which the ministry intends to encourage. And I think the ministry is also looking at ways to address the unsold property issue, you know, and one of the ideas was to work with Bank Negara to ease housing loan requirements for home buyers.
There we go. Then that brings in household debt. Yes. It's at 84% of GDP. Do you want to aggravate that number?
Okay, so let me just get this clear in my head. We're talking about the property sector as a whole, right? So that's commercial properties, residential properties, so on and so forth. This housing policy refers specifically to residential properties, isn't it?
Right, yes. Residential for people to live in. But even that term affordable as well, that is subject to plenty of debate. Yeah. Like what actually is affordable? You know?
Remember, Bank Negara came out with this report earlier this year that says that, you know, houses in Malaysia are seriously unaffordable, right? So it also boils down to where are all these affordable housing? I mean, property developers are saying that there is affordable housing. But the location, it boils down to location.
Of course,
again,
they'll say their properties are affordable, so you can come and buy.
You just have to look at your bank balance to figure out if that's true or not. Now, the government claims that the cancellation of the MOU between Telecom Malaysia and Internasional on the national fiberization plan is a boon to the industry. They're saying that this is a good move.
Yeah, this these comments coming from the Communications and Multimedia Minister, YB Gobind Singh. Well, he claims that the calling off of that collaboration between TM and TMB had prevented a possible monopoly in the industry. Again, we're talking about the National Fiberization Plan, the plan to extend the fiber network to the last mile.
Yeah, so replying to a question in Dewan Rakyat yesterday, in quotes, YB said, you know, it also allows them, this is TM and TNB, to work independently with us and other companies to provide the infrastructures throughout the country. So that's what, you know, he's talking about when it comes to preventing a possible monopoly in the industry.
Yeah, I know, to work with smaller players. But then, okay, you juxtapose what the minister has said with what Telecom and TMB said back in January of this year, whereby it makes sense for these two big guys who already have the existing infrastructure to work together. Why? Because you need that scale in order to carry out a project, you know, this huge, I mean, this large.
But the question is there a risk of monopoly being created? Well, is there a risk that, in fact, Malaysia's often suffered, you know, from poor pricing that actually is disadvantageous to the customer?
Yeah, is the monopoly referring to the infrastructure owners, like, for example, here, TM and TNB, or service providers like Broadnet? Remember that there's the whole company Broadnet Networks that came about because of the MOU?
Yeah, well, Broadnet was supposed to complement Telecom and Tenaga in the infrastructure side. So we're just talking about infrastructure right now. We're not talking about service providers, because service providers, you got Time, Maxis, you know, Unify, et cetera, right?
Okay, so the monopoly here he's talking about is the infrastructure.
Yeah, but then you compare or contrast those risks versus, say, having this national infrastructure in the hands of a GLC. Keep in mind that this is a social economic agenda here. The reason you have these GLCs is so that they can take on that risk, take on that burden, especially financial ones, and roll out this national fiber plan so that more Malaysians can benefit, you know, and perhaps not have profit being the primary delivery driver, as opposed to just letting all these small players who want to chase their profit, fine, you run that last mile to some remote part of Malaysia, how on earth are you going to turn that around and make it make money? As it stands, the reason we have this conundrum is because Tenaga's existing trunk fiber is underutilized. They have to sweat that asset. So how do they best go about it? Is it with Telecom or is it with some of these other smaller players?
Well, also in the news, Caring Pharmacy Group's net profit for the fourth quarter of this year rose some 35% to about 6 million ringgit, while its revenue for the quarter increased 8% to 129 million ringgit. This was apparently due to aggressive promotional campaigns.
Yeah, if you look at the net profit for the full year, increased some 44% to 18.7 million ringgit. You can see, you know, they started changing their strategy earlier this year. They went online, you know, the pharmacy going online, you can buy your vitamins and all that online. They also started closing some shops that were not performing, and they expanded into towns outside the Klang Valley region, opening up new outlets in some towns there outside KL. So that seems to be panning out well for them.
Look, this is for the quarter ending May 30th, right? So, I believe. So I think this one was also because, you know, Malaysians were just getting sicker. You know, we had political fatigue leading up to GE14, so we needed to pop more pills.
What about the euphoria that you used to tell?
People go to the pharmacy to buy makeup as well, and other things aside from pills.
You buy makeup from the pharmacy?
Yeah, really? Affordable makeup. From Penangites we go, you know, affordable makeup? Yeah, it's not the high-level $100 ones. But this is post-zero-rated GST.
You don't have to pop pills to feel high. You just have to breathe the air of freedom. Coming up to the top of the hour, we'll be back with opening numbers on the stock market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.